Hello, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm really excited to be here bringing you today's webinar on transitioning your training online during COVID-19. Training collectors has always been something that was done in person, but like so many things, that's changed during coronavirus. Training and continuing education, like school, is now being done online, and that presents its own set of challenges and opportunities. Today, we have Roger Weiss and Deborah Siski from the Collections Coach here to walk you through this new dynamic of training. Before Deborah and Roger start their presentation, I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts and a Slack channel for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it's got to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. In her nearly 40-year career in the collections industry, Deborah Siski has been an active contributor on many levels. She served on the ACA Board of Directors from 2012 to 2018, elected in the first board election under the new governance structure. An ACA certified instructor since 1983, Deborah has taught nearly 200 ACA seminars and has been instrumental in the development of the Credit and Collection Compliance Officer Program, the Trainer Specialist Program, FDCPA seminars, and numerous others. After serving ACA members as an ACA staffer, Deborah worked in training and development and compliance roles for prominent industry members and now works as a consultant and executive vice president of the Collections Coach. Roger Weiss is the Chief Operating Officer of CACI, runs the Collection Coach, and is also the President of ACA International. Roger's been involved in the collections industry since 1992 and is a frequent speaker at events and conferences. The format for today's webinar will be a presentation from Deborah and Roger. We encourage everybody to ask questions and we'll get to them as the presentation is ongoing. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab or the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel, or send it to us through the chat module. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on AccountsRecovery.net. With that, I'm going to hand it off to Roger to begin today's presentation. Roger, it's all yours.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having us on today, and thanks, everyone, for joining us today. I know that in a slowdown time, we're busier than ever. And I'm doing today's presentation as the color commentary to the one and only Deborah Siski with a sunrise background in the back. And I wanted to lead off by saying the reason that I chose a sunrise is because the horizon is bright. There's just a little bit of fog between us and it, and we don't know exactly how bright it's going to be. Right now, obviously, the world and so many consumers are in so much crisis and turmoil. And I've said this probably 1,000 times in the last 90 days, there is no group of people in this country that is better qualified to assist consumers in crisis than professional debt collectors. We work with people in crisis every day. It's just now there's a whole lot more of them. And things are changing. Many of us have remote workforces, and if you're anything like me, it might become something of a long-term or even a permanent establishment when you're able to do so. And if that's the case, you're gonna wanna be able to modify with the times and move your face-to-face training to that of a remote training. And it's not just as simple as jumping onto a Zoom platform and talking to some people that might be showing you their picture or might be doing 10 other things rather than paying attention. So Deborah is going to walk through today some practical tips and practices that you could very easily deploy today. And she's even going to give you instructions on how to download a handout that she's prepared. I'm very excited about this. I'll be monitoring the chat box and the questions. So if you have anything, pop it over to us and we'll get to you either out loud or in response there. And if you have any, fun trivial facts or movie quotes from 80s movies or one-hit wonders, let me know those too. I'm always interested. Anyway, with that, Deborah, it's your show.
Thanks a lot, Roger, and thanks, Mike, for having us today for this webinar. I'm pretty excited to talk about these topics. It's, you know, it's a new world, as Roger said, and we're trying to do the best we can to adjust to it and help our employees adjust to it and remain productive and learning and, you know, all those things that we would hope they always are. So as Roger said, we did prepare a handout. There were a couple links in the email Mike sent out this morning. If you missed that, you can download the presentation and some handout information at thecollectionscoach.com. You'll see right on the main page there where you can download this presentation and the handout. I have tried to design this webinar in such a way that would sort of mimic how you might do things for your own in-house online training practices. So, you know, to get the full experience, you might wish you had the handout, and we'll do the best we can, whether you have it or not. I think you'll be fine. So in this session today, we're really going to address several different challenges that are involved with creating online training. So just to give you an overview, we're going to talk about the multitasking challenge. We'll start there, as Roger referred to it. So perfect little segue. Then we'll talk about the motivation for adults challenge. Adults do need motivation sometimes to attend to training. So we'll talk about that briefly. We'll talk about content challenges. We'll talk about the engagement challenge, so how to keep your learners engaged in training. And then we'll talk about the interaction challenge, as we do have some challenges related to interaction with our learners when we're doing our training online. So let's just go ahead and jump in and get started. And Roger's watching the chat box for questions. So if you have questions, please let us know that. So if you have downloaded the handout, you'll see that we have some fill in the blanks, which is a method that you can use to keep your students engaged in the class. So that's why we did it this way. So let's just talk a little bit for a minute about the difference between classroom training and online training. So you can see here on the slide, you know, this is kind of what, maybe not best case scenario, but what classroom training looks like. You've got your students facing all the same direction. You've got your instructor with some PowerPoint there, and that's kind of traditional types of training. But in this day and age, the instructors have a little bit less control. So when the training is happening in the classroom, the instructors or facilitators are in control, and that's for you that are taking notes in the handout. The learners are visible and present, right? They're right there. You can see if someone's lost. You can see the body language. You can see the quizzical looks on their faces if they're not kind of, you know, pacing with you, and it helps to get that feedback from your students. Now, in remote settings where the trainer might not see attendees or may not even be present, then the learners have more control over their environment, right? So they have the ability to tune out or to be distracted. And so that's the challenge that we face when we're trying to do training remotely. You know, often the distractions come about because of things that our trainees can't even control. So, you know, if we were in the same room, I would ask you some questions, such as what are the types of things that cause people to be distracted that are out of their control? You know, and it can be sirens going on outside or their pets or other animals in their environment, you know, distracting them, kind of other things too. And if you think of other things that I haven't thought of, you can put those in the chat box and Roger will bring those up with us. So, you know, we have some issues when we know that our people are remote and it's a little bit harder to keep their attention sometimes. So with that, that's kind of the first challenge that we may face with our training. The other challenge is a little bit related to learner participant focused learning is what I'm trying to say. So we've worked through training to the point today where we're not just sitting face-to-face with trainees, asking them to just take in everything we say and then send them off. We really have designed our training to be participant-centered so that people are involved. And as you can see here, we have people at, you know, a whiteboard or a flip chart creating some kind of discussion points and someone perhaps designing a presentation for the class or what we might call teach backs and someone else maybe talking to a subject matter expert to get information needed in the class. And so this is really hard to get done when we're training remotely. And so we really have to think about how we can foster this type of collaboration when we're doing remote training. So those are some of the challenges that we have to try and respond to. And we'll talk about those as we move through our seminar here.
Deborah, so, if I could add to that just for a moment, you know, just like the work from home model, the training remotely model needs to be addressed in the same way. And a couple of things that I would, you know, caution people about is the background distractions Deborah talked about. But I can't tell you the number of these that I've been on in just the past couple of months where someone is dressed nicely in front of a camera and then a significant other or someone walks behind them in their pajamas or, you know, some gym shorts or something. And that creates a lot of distraction for people, as well as being interrupted. You know, my dog barks upon anyone entering my zip code. So even before the training begins, encouraging people to eliminate as much of those external distractions as possible to make sure that they're in some sort of a, I'll call it a safe space, but a focused space so they're able to focus on what's in front of them, I think could pay big dividends to you or for you also.
Yeah, absolutely. My office is like a little bomb shelter closet with storage shelves and me. So that's works the best for me. So one thing we talked about, one challenge that we would need to meet, the first one that we talked about is the multitasking challenge. So I'm sharing with here with you some information from a very recent survey. This is from 2018 related to the problems that can occur when people are multitasking in meetings and in training. So I think the first very telling figure is the one at the top. This is 95% of business professionals say they multitask during meetings. It's unavoidable. Everything is at hand, your phone, iPad, whatever kind of, maybe you're running two screens, you're running two different things when you're trying to be in a meeting or in a class. And so people have admitted it, 95% multitask during meetings. And that's a real challenge for an instructor, right? You're trying to get people to concentrate on, you know, the topic at hand and maybe some new skills that you're trying to get people to learn or new compliance information. And multitasking really makes that harder. Look at this figure here. 1 in 3 of multitaskers lose track or have trouble retaining the information that was being discussed. So again, it's a challenge. And sometimes the information that you're presenting is vital or essential. And so even 1 person out of 3 missing out on that information can be put your company in real jeopardy. And then 1 in 5 admit multitasking in meetings has caused them to make an error in their work. So to me, that's even a more disturbing figure, you know, especially when you're training key tasks and new skills, or, you know, again, as I said, compliance requirements, that as a compliance person, that really, you know, kind of scares me a lot. And so just knowing that people admit not getting stuff and then having to review it later is a little bit scary. 52% of respondents to the survey said that splitting their attention across 2 or more pieces of content has caused them to watch, read, or listen to something multiple times. So it just means that the training is actually taking more time than you expected it to take because people have to do it over, perhaps even multiple times. Now, that the value of online training is that you can record your sessions and make them available to these 52% of people that need to review it. We're going to talk a little bit later about the value, the real value in recording your sessions and having them available to you as it relates to retention. So that's a little foreshadowing into what's to come. So, you know, multitasking challenge is something that we really have to try and address while we're in our training programs. So on the other side of that coin, though, why is it that people can watch Netflix for hours on end, and you've probably all done it. You find your favorite show that you're going to binge this week, you know, because there's little else to do sometimes. So why is it that people can watch Netflix for hours on end, but paying attention to meetings or training is such a challenge? And the reason for that is that PowerPoint is not equal to Netflix, right? So there's a real difference. So, oops, sorry about that, wrong mouse. So when people have the power to be selective about what they're engaged in, you know, they can attend to it for long periods of time, like binge watching. You know, they sit down at the middle of the afternoon to watch something on Netflix. The next thing they know, it's midnight, and they didn't even feel those hours pass. But when they're not able to select what they're watching, then their attention lags quickly. So the key to engaging content is compelling narrative combined with stimulating visuals. And that's the main difference here between a PowerPoint and something on Netflix. And we'll explain that as we move forward here in a little bit. All right. So the next challenge that we wanted to talk about is the motivation for adults challenge. You know, adults have goals, especially adults in business. They have goals they need to meet, some of them that they've written for themselves, some goals that have been, you know, applied to them by their supervisory staff, by their managers. And so they're really interested in, you know, what's in it for them. So when you're developing training for online distribution, whether it's instructor-led or self-study, really want to start with the motivation. You don't want to jump right into your content. You want to start with some information that helps to motivate your learner to pay attention and to learn the material. So it's kind of like a movie where a murder occurs in the first, you know, 5 minutes of the movie or the show. And the rest of the show is kind of about how that murder was solved, how the mystery was solved, kind of the process, and then you get involved with the characters and the dialogue and the setting, and it's very engaging, right? And so that's kind of the thing that we have to compete with when we're creating our online training. So so that's different from in the classroom. In the classroom, all of you that have attended online or person-to-person training, you get engaged with your instructor. Your instructor has little stories on the side to tell. You know, you get the experiences of everyone else in your classroom. So it's a whole different scenario to engagement. But this motivation is key. It's what helps people to stay involved. So there are three things that adults want to know when they walk into a training class or they log into an online training. First of all, they want to know, what's in it for me? Secondly, they want to know, you know, how is knowing this or doing this going to help me perform on the job immediately? Adults expect immediate application to the job that they do. And their other question is, well, why should I care about this? And so you really have to tell them that. You have to make it very clear. You can't imply it. You can't hope that they're going to pick it up as they're going through the training. You have to make it pretty crystal clear to your attendees why they should be motivated, why they should care about it. So this kind of drives us to when we're creating our content, we want to make sure that we are filtering all of the content or all of what we think we need to put in our content through these three questions. Is it something the trainee is going to benefit from? Is it something that's going to help them perform on the job right away? And is there something in here that they should care about? So filter your content through those three, and it will help you to determine really what should be in your training. All right. So once we've met that challenge, the motivation challenge, we have content challenges. So my advice, as you're trying to move your training from a classroom setting to an online setting, is start from scratch. Don't feel like, or don't think you can just take your slides that you have created for your classroom training and, you know, stick them online and open up a Zoom and you're ready to go. It's not going to work out that way, because it's your slides probably have too many words on them. You know, when I learned how to make PowerPoints, and even before that, overheads, Roger, I don't know if you're even old enough to remember overheads, but, you know, there was a standard for creating these materials. And the standard was no more than 6 bullet points per slide and no more than 6 words per bullet. So that's, you know, do the math, 36 words on your slide. I bet if you go back and look at PowerPoints that you may have or that you've seen in other training classes, they have way more than 36 words on them. And the thing about words is people don't remember words as well as they remember pictures. You see, I've had very few words on any of my slides, and that's because I want you to listen to what I'm saying. And if you're trying to read what's on a slide, then you can't listen to what I'm, whoop. I have two mouses going, you guys, and I'm messing it up royally. I'm sorry. So people can't listen and read at the same time. So our visuals have to be visual. They have to be pictorial. And the other recommendation I'd make is to ditch that boring template. You know, I'm sure we're all used to using sort of the corporate template that's been created by our marketing people or, you know, some other group. And that's the one that we have to use for everything, right? But it's not really made for the training environment. It's the template that we use when we create PowerPoint presentations for client visits or client presentations or, you know, RFP responses and that kind of thing. But we don't really need it for training presentations. You know, just ditch it. People are not going to forget who their employer is, you know, during the course of a training presentation. So you don't need to have the company logo as the watermark background on every single slide. But people will remember the pictures that you present and the concepts that you've associated with those pictures more than they'll remember words on the screen. So that's going to be sort of my first piece of advice, is start over.
Deborah, if I could jump in on that same topic.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. My face isn't lighting up with the yellow box saying that everyone can hear me. So I thought I'd ask. So if I could jump in on that same topic. This is such a great opportunity to start everything from scratch and reimagine everything. Anything that you wanted to do, now is, there's not going to be a better time than to break it. I don't care how well it's working. Break it, reimagine it, rethink it, re-engineer it, and represent it. And I'm always big on incorporating as many of your senses as you can. So make aesthetically pleasing slides. I was so glad to hear Deborah say ditch the corporate template. Oh my gosh, I just, right? But use some, there's Adobe Stock has great images. Presenter Media, I think Deborah, you told me about that years ago. All of these have really fun pictures and cartoons and some videos too that you can use. Use picturesque or telling backgrounds like we have done today. Use something that means something to challenge people's senses. You know, one of the things that I like to do, and I'm not doing it today, is I like to play a little bit of either topical or edgy music in the background just because I think it jazzes people up a little bit. Anything that makes any chunk of your presentation more memorable is going to be so advantageous to you. I mean, let's face it, most adults today think that if they're not multitasking, then they're not doing anything. And I think most adults today have some form or fashion of ADD. So you want to keep, as Deborah and I talk about, you want to keep your learnings to micro learning concepts. So short and poignant videos or trainings or interactions that drive individual points home and make them stimulating to your audience, so they're going to try to remember them, and then time after time, and I think Deborah's got more on that she'll talk about, but I was just glad to hear you say ditch the corporate layout, ditch the watermark, and I'm just challenging you. Break everything and rethink it. And now is your chance for a redo.
Yep, absolutely. And we're going to talk a lot more about that as we move forward as well. So still talking about content challenges. These pictures kind of illustrate the difference between what we give our trainees versus, and this is for your blanks on the next page of the handout, what they can handle. So what we give them versus what they can handle. So, you know, this, you can probably name the landmark that this picture comes from. Obviously, this is Niagara Falls. And a lot of times, classroom training feels like Niagara Falls. It's, you know, overwhelming information. You know, I've heard it referred to as a mind dump, which is kind of a negative way to describe training, but that's what it can feel like for employees, especially new people, or when you're trying to train new concepts or new skills or new systems to existing employees. It's too much. It's overwhelming. When you look at the other picture, it's, you know, a little baby, and I don't really mean to imply that I think trainees are little babies, but a child, a baby at this stage can only take in so much, and that maybe they need to take in smaller amounts of food more often. And that's kind of the approach that we want to take, as Roger said, with sort of a micro learning approach. So the other thing that happens when you're giving your trainees sort of the Niagara Falls version of your training is that they won't retain it. You know, how many times have you heard from, you know, from employees when they've, you know, done something the wrong way, or they've had kind of a call with a consumer that didn't go as well as it could, and you're trying to give them resources that you know they were trained on, right? You gave them earlier, but what you'll hear from them is, well, I was never trained on that, right? But you know that they were. And that happens when your training resembles Niagara Falls. And I think that's exacerbated when you're training online. It becomes worse. And why is that? Well, it's worse in an online training environment because it's harder to ask questions. It's harder to engage with the instructor. You might be embarrassed to ask a question because nobody else seems to be. And so you just sit there confused, right? And then also remember the multitasking. That can be another thing that will keep people from, you know, absorbing all the information. So that's why we want to keep our modules short, simple, focused, to the point, one concept at a time. That's what you were referring to, right, Roger? Yep. All right. So let's talk about how to select our content. And I have three barrels here. Oh, let me just get them all up here, I guess. Okay. So, and they're labeled need, nice, and find. So we're going to talk about this for a minute. So you need to prioritize the content of your training to the needs of your learners, right? And so you want to start by taking your classroom training and categorize it into these three buckets or barrels. The first one is the need barrel. And this one contains the information and skills that are absolutely necessary to do the task that you want to train your people how to do. It's the information they just can't do without when they're trying to do something new. So that's in your need bucket. That's what you want to concentrate your training on, you know, especially for new people, or when you're trying to teach someone a new skill or a new system, something like that. So the need bucket. So the next bucket is the nice bucket. And in this bucket or barrel, we're going to have the information contained that they can do the job without this nice to know information, but their performance can be enhanced or can be advanced if they have this information to kind of put into niches with the need to know information they already learned. So they have a context with that need to know. And then you add the nice to know on top of it. It's kind of like putting the frosting on the cake, right? It's kind of like fills it out, enhances the flavor, and provides a little bit more on top of the need to know. But I can tell you it's the nice to know can be confusing when they don't really even know what the need to know information means. So get them the need to know, have them perform the task for a while, bring them back into training, and then put the frosting on the cake with the nice to know information. And then the third bucket is labeled find. This is the information that people don't use very often. And so you put it in sort of a reference kind of document or documents that they might need to know to use occasionally. And so what you're training here with that bucket is how to find the information. So they don't need to memorize all that stuff because they hardly ever use it. But what they need to know is how to find it when the scenario comes up in which they need it and they know it's in there, they know how to find it. It's just, you know, it's up to you to find a way to categorize it, file it in a way they can find it, like in a SharePoint or Share Drives or however you put together that kind of information. So I guess my main advice related to this need, nice, and find is edit. Go back and look at your new hire training or the programs that you have for the classroom, edit, 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 and get down to the basics, kind of the skeleton, I guess. Roger's smiling. I hope that appealed to you. All right, so then the next step is to micro-size everything. So again, we have Niagara Falls. You're going to take Niagara Falls, and you're going to chunk it into small sips. So that's for your handout, small sips. Take the need to know and chunk it into small sips. Whoops. Darn it. Anyway, sorry, you guys, I'm professional. I'm sorry. Okay. So you take the need to know, you chunk it into small sips and you chunk it by concept. You know, what's logical? Is there a process? Is it going to go step by step? Does one thing build upon the next thing? It just depends on what your content is all about. But the key thing is to make your content concrete. if you have sort of abstract thought that you're trying to convey, for example, what a lot of compliance training is abstract, isn't it? And we need to make it concrete. So that's why we use recorded calls or, you know, examples out of lawsuits or court cases that illustrate a point, that kind of thing, to make it concrete. You know, we talk about, for example, misrepresentation in compliance training. Well, misrepresentation is a big thing. And I think it helps people to understand it if they understand, if they can see examples of what behaviors were found to be misrepresentative. You know, what did someone say that a court might have found was misrepresentation? And that takes that abstract and makes it concrete. So you can provide that kind of feedback in your smaller lessons, your micro learning sessions.
So if I could jump in on that, just real quick, and I want to use your example. In that, if you have, this is a great opportunity to make some of your online training or your remote training very interactive. In micro learning, I'm a big fan of putting a thesis statement first. This is what you're going to learn in this chunk of education. But then after that thesis statement, either give a couple of examples of how not to do something or ask for a couple of examples from your participants of how not to do something, because once you've established that baseline, it's pretty easy to go through the next three or four bullet points as to what to do or how to do something, because you've established a baseline of zero, and it just, it's mixing it up a little rather than going through the standard, here's your thesis statement, here are your bullet points, now let's talk about it. Talk about it before they necessarily know what those bullet points are, so you can modify their train of thought and give them a different paradigm, or you can be supportive of their train of thought and tell them how, you know, how common sense this is and how it is able to help them lock into their paradigm that much faster, stronger, and better.
Absolutely. Roger, that connects to another characteristic of adult learners, and that is that adult learners come into our environment with lots of experience. It might not be experience directly in the collection industry, for example, but it can be other experience that can be related or that can be relatable to what we're talking about. And so that was a super good point. Thanks for making that point. So as you're putting your content into these small SIPs, you have to, you know, make the relationship, help people understand the relationship between the first SIP and the second SIP, or your first module and your second one and your third. And you'll find that, you know, it just kind of flows from one to the other. And people will be telling you as they're learning from, you know, in the fourth or fifth unit, stuff they learned in the first and second unit that relate. And when that happens, you know, they really learned it and internalized it. So that will just almost happen naturally. It will happen more naturally if you do a little bit of training every day rather than doing all your training at once. You know, nobody, especially with online learning, nobody can really sit through, you know, even 5 or 6 hours or even 2 or 3 hours of training. Give it to them in small batches. It's a little bit maybe harder to manage because now you've got to get people lined up, queued up to train every day, but you're going to be glad you did it because your retention levels will increase exponentially. So you also want to make your microlearning modules available for review later. That will increase the retention that occurs. And retention is what it's all about, right? Why would you do training if you don't expect people to retain it and use the information later? So there is scientific research that's been done that shows by the fifth repetition of the same microlearning module, retention of the content is nearly 100% in adults. To me, that's pretty incredible. But just think about it. You know, any of you that have seen the same movie many times, Roger, you can probably name one or two. Mine is Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. I can listen to it with the sound off and just say all the dialogue myself because I've seen that movie so many times, but probably way more than five. Roger, you probably have one of those too, right?
So I've got a few of those.
Yeah. So, you know, it's true. We've all experienced the fact that repetition has a huge effect on retention. All right. So that's kind of the content. We want to microsize it and make it available often and in short pieces, small pieces that are digestible.
Deborah, I'd like to also point out,
yes,
after that repetition and that fifth time of repetition, It is that much more critical, though, to, upon occasion, revisit that same material, that same chunk. For those of you who are art fans out there, have heard of the painting The Persistence of Memory, or as I like to call it, The Melting Clocks. And what that means is we take our retention of a certain subject and then we start reformulating it in our brain, and it shifts just a little bit. And then over time, that memory degrades and it degrades a little bit more. So by relearning a micro-learning module, you're refreshing that and you're sharpening that. So your clocks are always on time. They're not melting.
No, that's a really great example. I love that, Roger. And that's one reason why, you know, we test regularly. I didn't really talk about testing in this webinar because we don't really have time to do it. But, you know, that's why it's so valuable to do annual testing, because not only does it force people to relearn stuff, but it helps you to know how well people understand. And if you have microlearning modules already available, then you can just reassign those and have people go back to them, create discussion groups and that kind of stuff around that training as well. All right, so the next challenge we want to talk about is the engagement challenge. You know, engagement is really easy to do in the classroom. As we said before, we're face-to-face with our learners. We can engage with them easily, even just by asking a question. And that kind of re-engages their attention and their back if they had wandered a bit. So we want to provide opportunities for learners to engage with our material too. Now, one belief I have strongly, and this comes from some of the training gurus out there that you might have heard of, and one of them says, you know, you shouldn't do anything for a learner that a learner can do for themselves. And so, you know, that's kind of where we're expecting some engagement to occur and some interactivity to occur. For example, if I had given you this handout that you have in front of you, if you've downloaded it, you wouldn't have needed to listen to me because all the content would have been in there. So giving people worksheets or a book like this one or many other ways that where you can make sure that they're engaged with the material will help with their retention and their learning of the material. So you want to provide interactive material that they must engage with to get the full content. You know, and I did it kind of the old fashioned way. I'm old fashioned, I guess, and provided a handout that you could print out. You know, you can use PowerPoint or even Adobe to create electronic workbooks. You know, AC International has gone to electronic workbooks that people can fill in some blanks and take some notes in boxes. And I love that because regardless of how you're engaged with the training, you can make it yours one way or the other. You know, I encourage my students to draw doodles if they like to, because some people will just remember something better if they can visualize it and make a picture of it the way it's meaningful to them. Write their notes in the margins. I try to provide what we call a scholar margin where people can write notes, bullet points, doodles, whatever it takes. So, you know, think about the materials that you're going to provide to your learners and make them interactive to the extent that you can. So use visuals as we've done to illustrate your points. And I think I said this earlier, create your PowerPoint last. So create your interactive materials first and then use your PowerPoints to illustrate those and to make your points. So the need to know information you want people to walk away with and have reference to later should be in that workbook that you're creating, the handout. Okay. So other ways that we can engage people is to use synchronous kind of interactive tools. So a lot of the learning management systems that we can use to distribute our training have these kind of tools available. If we're kind of old fashioned, we're telling people to go to a share folder and open a PowerPoint or open a workbook and follow along with the PowerPoint, we might not have these tools available. Everybody's kind of level of sophistication with how we distribute training is different. So like here with our Zoom, we have the chat box. People can ask questions in there in the Q&A box and if they want to. And that's, if you use it in a mindful way, you can make people use it and as part of your training to replace the discussion that you'd have in a classroom. So you can use tools like Slack, you know, which is just a chat messaging tool. You can have people come to class with their smartphones, start a chat, a group chat, and have them discuss material right there on their smartphone. Some platforms like WebEx has these breakout sessions that we have illustrated here that you can create a breakout session, split up your group, have them go into the breakout and, you know, do an activity and come back and report back. So if you do use a breakout session for training, engagement, interactivity, I just want to give you a couple of pointers about that. The first one is make sure that you send your learners into a breakout session with an assignment and a deadline so they have X number of minutes or, you know, whatever amount of time is appropriate to get the job done. A designated group leader, so someone who's like in charge, should be gathering people up and making sure that they're on task while they're in that break room. And also a designated reporter, so someone who can write down the notes while the leader is trying to have the discussion going and, you know, kind of putting it all together. That helps when you have to report back to the big group. I'd also suggest that you sort of change those roles if you have groups in and out of breakouts, just because then it's just a little bit more fair. Some people may not want to be the leader all the time. It's not their personality. They'll do it once, but they really don't want to do it again. So, you know, use those tools as they're available and get your people interacting during the session. It does make you feel a little bit out of control perhaps as the leader, but when you people come back in, you're going to be so happy to learn that they have learned that material and they're ready to apply it because they just talked about how they're going to apply it in their breakout session.
So, Deborah, if I could interject just a little bit here. Yeah. So I know that a lot of people on here might not have the need for a breakout session immediately. You might be a small shop, a small agency, a small creditor. So don't be intimidated by platforms, because most of the learning platforms out there, they're scalable and they're relatively inexpensive at the lower levels particularly. So you could get a basic Zoom or WebEx or LogMeIn or something for, I don't even know, $20 a month, $30 a month, maybe even less. Content is the key and content is king, but all of those platforms also have the ability to play and record PowerPoint presentations or do a video recording for you. So you can build your own content library over time, even as you're teaching. For example, with this one in particular, Mike said in the beginning, this session is being recorded and it's going to be made available. So you can do that with your own material in-house. Now, obviously, there are some companies with some built-out material already. ACA has an incredible library, and I understand the Collections Coach has quite the collection, too. Don't be intimidated and think that you've got to invest thousands of dollars, especially out of the gate. You can start at your own comfort level and as small as you need.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the kind of thing you can also, when you've got your library built, you can use it when you have people kind of coming back together, assuming that our offices may open and we'll have people, you know, back in the same work environment. That doesn't mean that those recordings are wasted. You can use those to bring people up to date, use them as a basis for discussions that can take the learning to a higher level. So appreciate that very much, Roger. All right, so we've talked about the sort of synchronous conversations that you can facilitate during online training. You can also do interaction in an asynchronous way, which means it's not happening simultaneously. People are kind of doing it on their own as time allows, so it's not in the moment. But asynchronous assignments give learners time to think about what they've, you know, learned in the training environment. They can digest those lessons. You know, they're really good for sharing those aha moments that occur after the training occurs, for comments or questions that come up after the training occurs when they're using the modules independently. I mean, I don't know about you, but my aha moments always come when I'm in the shower. I don't know why. I just, you know, those things come to me and I can't wait to get done and go write it down so I don't forget. But, you know, people come up with their reactions to training at times that are not predictable. And so you can use these tools, these asynchronous tools, to get people interacting with the material even more and with each other. So, you know, a lot of training, especially if you're doing it in a series, you may have homework assignments, readings, you know, written assignments, go back to your desk and write down the next three times you hear this XYZ thing happen that we just talked about and bring that back for discussion. Those are all kind of asynchronous types of activities that you could use. So you can do that by email. Maybe your folks have Gmail and they can work on it outside the office if you're not giving them access to email, you know, except for during certain hours or however you're doing it. You can do it via Messenger or any of the other, sort of message type of systems that aren't more like direct messaging or immediate messaging. So this kind of engagement can also foster teamwork. So especially if you're giving people group projects to do, which might make them kind of cringe, but they are so valuable. You know, I got my master's degree through the University of Phoenix, and every single class had a group assignment that culminated the class. So you're reading material, you're going to class, it's all asynchronous, and interacting through discussion groups that were based in email, which is another way that you can get people discussing the same topic through a focused email with a thread. And the value of it is pretty amazing. So it's just another tool for you to think about using. All right. So the last challenge that we want to talk about, well, the next to the last, is the interaction. I guess this is the last one, the interaction challenge. So, you know, as an instructor or a trainer, you like being in the classroom with people. That's why you got into training, right? It's something that gives you a lot of energy and you love it. When you're training on Zoom, you know, maybe you see, you know, sort of the Brady Bunch kind of set up with your students, but you might be on another platform that doesn't provide you that ability to interact and see how people are responding to your training. So my suggestion is, if you can't see your audience, visualize your audience. I mean, I could see Roger is going to visualize that audience in the top left-hand corner without a doubt, as he's used to that when he's out there on stage and he likes the fans and all that stuff. And so you kind of have to visualize your audience in a way that's going to give you some energy, energize you. So, you know, that's one challenge. And then you have the other challenge of interaction with each other. You want your students to really have discussions and, you know, kind of talk about the application of the material. So other ways that you can foster interaction in your classroom or do things like take a poll, you know, see what people think about some of the topics. You can do that before you get started, during, or after. A poll can be like a little quiz at the end of your training. That's valuable to do. You can ask questions, you know, through a chat function, or ask it audibly and ask people to respond in the chat function. You know, ask for opinions too. You're not always just discussing facts, but you want to know how people feel and think about the concepts that you're training. So have them ask questions of you, have them ask questions of each other. You know, ask who disagrees with the thing that you just presented and why do they disagree with that? And that will get to motivation for some of the adult learners in your room too. They really want to be able to be expressive. You know, adults just have grown up with that. I would also encourage you to use the audio function that your platform may have, you know, where you can unmute everyone or unmute people as they indicate that they'd like to speak and be heard and ask a question. Sometimes people would rather ask their question verbally than type it out in a chat box. And if, you know, my feeling is if that helps someone learn, then I'm going to use that. So you have to really know the limitations and not only the limitations, but the features that your platform has and use them to, you know, the broadest extent possible. That way you're getting your money's worth for having, you know, purchased the platform. And you're also going to find that it's going to increase retention, you know, tenfold. I think it's going to be hard to measure, but it's definitely going to happen. All right. Anything to add to that, Roger?
I think you did a really good job explaining or talking about the different variant options, and just I would just put emphasis on the importance of diversifying the platform and using different tools in it. I was asked earlier in the chat box, what do I think about using like a whiteboard function? And I think if a tool is available and you are used to using it, and you're practiced at using it, so rehearse before you use it. But yes, I absolutely think you can and you should use those tools at various points to drive different items home. People are going to learn at different paces. People are going to have different styles of learning, and those styles of learning might be variant throughout even a presentation. So if you allow vocal interaction with the participants where someone can ask a question out loud, or how about this? If you've got a list of your participants and you occasionally ask a question and call on someone to answer it out loud, I think that that might create a little bit of positive anxiety of attendees, and they're going to be focused on paying attention a little bit better, right?
I think it's a possibility. I would certainly want to warn learners that that may occur, but I've heard stories of people just taking a picture of themselves and putting that in their Zoom background, and then they leave. And it looks like they're there, but they're not really there. So calling on people every now and then probably, could help with that. All right. So the last thing we want to talk about is how to end your session. So end with a bang. You really want to have a strong summary or closing for your session. Reemphasize the main points. Be sure to share resources or readings or, kind of where you want your students to go next with the information. Oftentimes with these online sessions, we're like, okay, well, we're out of time. Thanks for coming. See you next time. And people are kind of left hanging. So I think it's very important to have a summary, to summarize the information. If there's an assignment that you have an expectation will be completed by your next session, make sure that you emphasize that with your closing. If you're doing a series, I'd like to provide a written syllabus in advance so people have that, and then your ending for your session will reinforce kind of what the syllabus said. As we said earlier, record your session. So if class members missed for whatever reason, they can catch up on their own. It's not quite the same as being there live, but they have the opportunity to at least catch the content, and then you can discuss it with them sort of on your own time. And then once you've got that session done, you kind of have to start over now at the beginning of where we talked about. Start over with developing content and putting together your next session. Oftentimes we don't have the freedom or the time to put together a whole series of 8 or 10 sessions before we have to start the first one. And, we might, if you're a control freak like me, you might like to have them all done before you start with session one. But on the other hand, if you get the first couple sessions done, and then you realize that you want to change it up because something didn't work or something worked really well, and you want to make sure you're including that kind of activity in your session, your subsequent sessions, then you're kind of not having to start from scratch. But, think about things as in a continuum rather than standalone. And that helps with retention too, because people are going to relate the subsequent training to the earlier training that they had. So before we come to a close, Roger, I don't know if there are questions. I just wanted to kind of review the challenges that we talked about. We started with the discussion of the multitasking challenge, and we showed you that data. We talked about the motivation for adults challenge that we have to meet with every session. We talked about the content challenges, how to focus your content, how to sort your content into the three buckets, the need, the nice, and the fine buckets, and that will kind of help guide you as you're developing your training sessions. We talked about that engagement challenge. How do we get people to be engaged with the material, more of an active learner than a passive learner? And then we talked about the interaction challenge. We're trying to get people to interact with each other as the instructor to really solidify that learning in their mind. So those are the 5 challenges of taking your classroom training and moving it over to online training.
So Deborah, if I could add to that, and I don't have any Roman candles, which, as everyone knows, I normally carry on me. I can't close out with that today. But one thing that I like doing in summarizing those bullet points, the things that people should walk away with, I also like to ask, and I put this in the chat box as Deborah was speaking there, I'd like to know from a few of you, what's one thing, an item or an idea that you got out of today's session that you can walk away with and start using today? Because at the end of the day, the goal of every training session, whether it's in person, whether it's remote, whether it's interactive, in any form or fashion, has to have something, an action plan that you can walk away with. And I'm just curious, what some people are saying. Micro lessons, that's great. Less wordiness. Recording our training, getting rid of boring corporate templates. Yes.
There we go.
Success.
All right.
So yeah. Those keep flooding in. Deborah, I turn it back over to you to close us out.
Okay, thank you. And I just wanted to mention one resource that I use for all these illustrations, all the photos that I use today. There's a website called Unsplash. It's got thousands, I would almost guess hundreds of thousands of copyright-free photos that you can use. They also now have artwork from some of the major museums that you are free to use. And I think they have videos there as well. That's the best resource I found recently for some really great illustrations that, you know, it's searchable. So you have a sort of abstract concept that you want to try and visualize, search on the concept. And I have had a lot of good luck finding really great illustrations or photos to illustrate the points that I'm trying to make. So it sounds like people have gotten some good ideas from our session. I'm really happy to know that. If you'd like to contact me directly and ask questions, or have me look at something that you've created, or if you have questions about the collections coach, you can get a hold of me at Deborah@Siski.com. Roger, we had the collection. Actually, I have another slide that has the collections coach website. You can email us through here. Roger and I both have collectionscoach.com email addresses, which I think are available on the website there as well. So Roger, I'll just throw it back to you then.
Okay. So everyone, I know, and I'm talking to the agency people out there. If you've got a seasoned learner that's been in the desk for 8 to 10 years, you just know that they're not going to be taught anything. But if we can teach them one or two small things that improve their collections just incrementally by 2 or 3 or 5%, that all drops to the bottom line because you have no additional expensive resource in there. And we could do that 2 or 3 times over, and you multiply that by 5, 10, or 100 collectors. What does that mean to your overall bottom line? I hope today's been helpful for you. I want to thank you again for joining us. Mike, I want to thank you for providing such a great platform, and you're a pro's pro at this, and we appreciate it. And I want everyone to remember, stay safe, stay sane, and stay strong, because the sunrise is on the horizon. We're driving there fast.
Awesome. Great. Well, Deborah, Roger, thank you so much for taking the time to share your thoughts and your perspectives with us. To the person who asked about the recordings, they'll be up on accountsrecovery.net. There's a tab right at the top of the page that says webinar recordings. They'll be up there probably by tomorrow morning, so you'll be able to access them there. I'll add my site of choice. What I'm doing, my graphics, is Canva, C-A-N-V-A, canva.com. Templates, videos, images, and I spend, I think it's $13 a month, and everything is free. So definitely check that out. Add that to your list of resources that Deborah and Roger shared with you today. Thanks, guys. This was awesome. Really appreciate it. Definitely would love to have you back soon. And we'll keep this education going.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks so much.
All right, everybody. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.